I mean, imagine a modern American CEO, right? The kind of person who runs a multi-billion dollar enterprise.
Right, the titans of industry.
Exactly. You'd probably think their absolute biggest fear is that a competitor is going to build a better product.
Sure, or maybe that consumer trends will just suddenly shift on them.
Yeah, standard market forces. But what if their actual biggest fear, the thing that literally keeps them up at night, isn't the free market at all?
Okay, color me intrigued.
What if their biggest fear is simply falling out of favor with the government?
Oh, wow. That's quite a premise.
Right. Well, today we are doing a deep dive into a single, just fiercely written document that claims exactly that.
Yeah, it's an op-ed, right? By an author named Brent Lambie.
It is sourced from a document that is simply titled Oligarchs Y dot dash PDF.
Straight to the point with that title.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And the title of his actual piece really sets the stage for where we're going today. It's called America's Oligarchy is Here, and We Built Putin's Playbook from Scratch.
Which is just a massive claim. I mean, the text itself, it really does not pull any punches when detailing how this alleged system operates.
No, it certainly doesn't. But before we dive into the mechanics of all this, we really need to explicitly and impartially set the stage for you, the listener.
Absolutely crucial we do that.
Yeah, because the source contains some highly politically charged allegations about the U.S. government and the American economy. So we want to be crystal clear right up front.
Right. We are not taking sides here.
Not at all. And we are not endorsing the viewpoints of this content, either left-wing or right-wing.
No, our mission today is strictly to convey the ideas, you know, the arguments and claims exactly as they are presented in the original source material.
Exactly. We're just here to analyze the structure of the text, to understand what the author is saying, not to validate the politics behind it.
Right. So our core objective today is really to dissect Lambie's central thesis, which is that the United States is systematically building a Russian-style oligarchic power structure.
A heavy thesis.
It is. And what's fascinating here is how he argues this is actually taking place.
Right, because it's not what you'd expect.
Exactly. He claims this transition into an oligarchy isn't happening through, you know, overt violence or a military force in the streets.
Right, no tanks rolling down Main Street.
Right. Instead, he says it's being built through a quiet, almost invisible machinery of corporate compliance, immense financial pressure, and absolute narrative control.
Okay, let's unpack this because the
Okay.
way Lambie lays out this argument, it honestly reads like an architect's blueprint for authoritarianism.
That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, so for this deep dive, let's actually look at it exactly that way. Let's explore this op-ed like a structural blueprint.
I like that. So where do we start?
We're going to start by examining the foundation, which Lambie argues is the silent compliance of Wall Street.
Makes sense. Start at the bottom.
Right. Then we'll look at how the walls are erected around us, which he identifies as the capture of media and artificial
Oh,
intelligence.
that AI part is huge.
It really is. And finally, we will examine the roof, the crushing enforcement mechanisms that keep the whole structure intact and basically punish anyone who steps out of line.
You know, that structural approach is highly effective for understanding his argument because Lambie himself is very deliberate in how he constructs this narrative.
He really builds it piece by piece.
He does. He starts right at the bedrock of the American economy. He looks at the macroeconomic alarm bells that are currently being sounded by financial elites.
Right, the foundation.
Yeah. He calls this structural shift an inside job-like, a deliberate accelerating pattern of power consolidation that he says would make Vladimir Putin incredibly envious.
And he emphasizes that the silence surrounding all the shift, that's the actual story here.
The fact that no one is talking about it.
Exactly. He claims that among Wall Street CEOs, calculated compliance has completely replaced courage and conscience.
Wow, so they just fall in line.
That's what he's saying. He argues they know exactly what is happening to the free market, but they refuse to say it out loud.
And to anchor this, he actually points to a very specific figure, doesn't he?
He does. He points to Andrew Ross Sorkin, the financial journalist and CNBC anchor.
Right, a major voice in finance.
Absolutely. Lambie notes that Sorkin is drawing these really chilling comparisons between the current concentration of economic and political power in America and the vulnerabilities that actually preceded the 1929 market crash.
You know, invoking Sorkin is a crucial rhetorical move by Lambie.
How so?
Well, he specifically describes Sorkin as hardly a bomb-throwing radical.
Right. Sorkin represents the very center of establishment finance.
Exactly. I mean, Sorkin talks to the biggest players in the world every single morning. So if someone in that deeply connected position is sounding 1929-level alarms, Lambie argues that it validates the idea that something foundational in the American economic engine is cracking.
It's not just your average bear market.
No, he's saying it's a systemic vulnerability caused by way too much power sitting in way too few highly coordinated hands.
Hold on, though. I mean, oligarchy is a massive, highly loaded word.
It definitely is.
So is Lambie just using it as, like, a dramatic buzzword to describe standard corporate greed and lobbying? Or is he pointing to actual mechanical changes in how power operates?
He's arguing it's a mechanical change.
Because when he describes these modern CEOs, he paints this picture of them walking on eggshells, dutifully attending state dinners, smiling for the cameras, and, you know, writing massive checks.
Right.
To me, that sounds less like traditional capitalism and more like, well, like a protection racket.
Protection racket. That's a great analogy.
Like paying your dues to the local boss, showing up to the dinner, writing the check. It's just the new unwritten cost of doing business.
And you've hit on the exact structural shift he is describing there. He's saying it is not just corporate greed. It is a fundamental realignment of the American power dynamic.
So the rules have actually changed.
Exactly. Because in a true free market, a CEO's primary anxiety should be about out-innovating their competitors, right?
Yeah, they should be worried about building a better widget.
But in the system Lambie is describing, their primary anxiety has shifted entirely toward avoiding the wrath of the state.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He argues that these leaders fall in line because they have seen the sheer bureaucratic terror unleashed on those who don't.
So the silence of these so-called job creators isn't just some passive phenomenon.
No, not at all. It's not a lack of opinion. He says it is a highly active, highly calculated survival strategy in a newly built oligarchic system.
Okay, so Wall Street is silenced by this overwhelming financial pressure. That's our foundation.
Right.
But if the foundation of this new system is built on silence, how do you keep the broader public from noticing that the rules of the game have completely changed?
Well, you have to build the walls.
Exactly. That brings us to the walls of this blueprint. You have to control the narrative the public consumes.
Right. And Lambie moves seamlessly from financial compliance to the active suppression of information.
He really does. He specifically looks at how media and technology are being structurally reshaped.
He calls it the architecture of information control.
So how does he say they do it?
Well, he points to several complex, high-profile examples to illustrate the mechanics of this capture. For instance, he brings up the massive Skydance merger.
Right. Okay, let's break that down a bit for context.
Sure.
Skydance essentially engineered a takeover of Paramount, and Paramount is the parent company of CBS.
Right. And CBS, of course, is home to 60 Minutes.
Arguably the crown jewel of American investigative television.
Exactly. And Lambie claims this merger was engineered specifically to bring CBS into a more pliable configuration.
Wow. So they're using the corporate structure to change the journalism.
That is exactly the point he is making. Think about it. When a massive merger requires regulatory approval from the government, the resulting corporate entity becomes hyper-aware of not biting the hand that feeds it.
Right. You don't want to anger the people who have to sign off on your deal.
Exactly. If the parent company is reliant on state favor to finalize its deals, the investigative news division suddenly finds itself under immense pressure to soften its coverage.
So he's arguing that the corporate structure itself is used to defang the journalism.
Yes. And he also points to Larry Ellison visiting the White House and subsequently receiving favorable regulatory consideration.
Which, as Lambie points out, is something that should have raised alarm bells in every newsroom in the country.
Right. It should be front page news.
Because if a tech billionaire can just walk into the executive branch and walk out with regulatory hurdles miraculously cleared, the rest of the corporate ecosystem takes diligent notes.
Oh, absolutely. The message is clear. The law is negotiable if you have the right access.
And then Lambie just lists the existential pressures facing the networks that don't play ball.
He does. He talks about CNN being financially squeezed.
Yeah.
He mentions the administration extracting a financial settlement directly from CBS. He even cites the targeting of late night host Stephen Colbert over political satire.
Over jokes.
Over jokes. The underlying mechanism here is brutal, as he puts it. Comply or pay.
Man. And it even extends to public broadcasting, doesn't it?
It does. Lambie argues that institutions like NPR and PBS are finding themselves on the chopping block.
Right.
And he makes a fascinating distinction here. He says they aren't being targeted because they are failing their mission to the public.
Wait, then why?
They're being targeted precisely because they are fulfilling it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Rah.
In an oligarchic structure, an entity that serves the public interest rather than the president's interest, is inherently viewed as a threat that must be dismantled.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though.
Okay, lay it on me.
Because controlling legacy media like television networks, that's an old authoritarian trick, right?
Classic.
But Lambie transitions from traditional media to artificial intelligence.
Yes, this is a huge pivot.
He points to the recent push for government supply chain oversight and national security access to major AI platforms.
Mm-hmm.
He specifically mentions the company Anthropic.
Right.
And to make this relatable for you listening,
right,
imagine a king who is threatened by a dissenting idea.
Okay.
The old way of handling it is to just ban the specific book.
Sure, burn the books.
But what Lambie is describing with AI is a king who wants absolute control over the printing press itself.
Oh, wow.
He doesn't just want to ban the book. He wants to own the alphabet. That's how Lambie views this government grab for AI access. He calls it controlling the infrastructure of thought.
Controlling the infrastructure of thought. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the philosophical implications there are just staggering.
They really are.
Every strong man in human history has understood that controlling communication is the absolute precondition for controlling everything else in a society.
Exactly.
So Lambie is arguing that demanding unfettered backdoor access to these incredibly powerful AI reasoning tools, it isn't just some standard boring government procurement strategy.
Right. It's not just buying software.
No. He views it as the opening clause of an authoritarian manifesto.
Because AI isn't just a search engine that retrieves links anymore. It's a reasoning engine.
Right. It creates.
If the state controls the AI that citizens use to synthesize information, you know, to write legal code, to draft corporate documents, or even to educate their children, the state is literally shaping how a society processes reality.
And that is precisely the danger Lambie is highlighting. If the government has supply chain oversight over the neural networks of the future, they are managing the boundaries of acceptable thought before the thought is even fully formed by the citizen.
It's terrifying when you put it like that.
He says it is the ultimate frictionless evolution of media control.
Okay, so we have the foundation of Wall Street compliance.
Sure.
And we have these massive walls of media and AI narrative control.
Right.
Now we need to look at how everyday economic survival is dictated for everyone else living inside this structure.
Yeah, how does the rest of the economy function?
Well, Lambie transitions to what he calls the patronage economy.
Right.
He focuses heavily on the new global tariff regime and blatant corporate favoritism.
He describes the current tariff system as a patronage system of Baroque complexity.
Baroque complexity.
Yeah. His core argument is that the countless carve-outs, exemptions, and loopholes within these tariffs, they are not based on any sound mathematical economic logic.
So what are they based on?
They're based entirely on donor loyalty.
Wait, aren't tariffs just standard trade policy? I mean, if you're listening to this, you're probably thinking the exact same thing I am.
Sure, governments use them all the time.
Yeah, to protect domestic industries from foreign dumping, right?
Hmm.
So how does Lambie differentiate between normal government economic regulation and this dark oligarchic patronage system he's describing?
That is the crucial distinction to make, and it all comes down to the mechanism of selective enforcement.
Elective enforcement, okay.
Yeah. Lambie isn't just critiquing the existence of a tariff. He is critiquing how it is weaponized.
Oh, okay.
He mentions massive players like Amazon, Microsoft, and Union Pacific. And he also points to the massive acquisition plays surrounding U.S. Steel and Intel.
So how does the weaponization actually work?
Well, imagine a broad tariff is slapped on a specific imported good. If you are a loyal corporate ally, you are quietly granted a national security exemption or a special carve-out, allowing you to completely bypass the tax.
Must be nice.
But if you are a competitor who spoke out against the administration, you are forced to pay the full crushing weight of that tariff.
Oh, I see. So the tariff isn't actually a broad macroeconomic tool designed to help the American worker.
Not in this view, no.
It's a highly targeted weapon of compliance. You use the regulatory state to grant a lucrative carve-out to the loyal CEO, and you use that exact same regulation to bankrupt the competitor who speaks out of turn.
Exactly. Same law, entirely different application based on loyalty.
Wow.
And that is exactly the parallel Lambie draws to Vladimir Putin's strategy with Russia's energy sector.
How so?
Well, he notes that Putin realized something very important early on. You don't actually need to nationalize and officially own every company outright to control an economy.
You don't.
No. You just need to make it abundantly clear to the market that your personal favor is required for any company to survive.
So the rule of objective law is completely replaced by the rule of subjective favor.
Precisely. And Lambie points out a bitter, tragic irony here.
What's that?
In Russia, the men who require state favor to survive, you know, the ones who navigate these baroque systems of loyalty to enrich themselves, they are rightly called oligarchs.
Right.
But in America, he notes, we seat them at the inauguration and politely call them job creators.
Oof. That's a sharp contrast.
It is. He argues this represents the loss of a core American proposition.
The foundational idea that no man, no matter how rich or powerful, is above the market, above the law, or above the press.
Exactly. And to describe how we are losing this proposition, he borrows Ernest Hemingway's famous description of bankruptcy.
Oh, I know this quote. It happens gradually and then all at once.
Yes. It is a phenomenal literary reference because it perfectly captures the insidious, creeping nature of structural decay.
Right, because an oligarchic system looks perfectly normal from the outside.
Yeah, the stock market might even be up. People are still going to work.
Until the very moment the invisible rot reaches the load-bearing pillars and the whole thing collapses all at once.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the final section of our blueprint. The roof weighing down on everything and everyone inside.
The enforcement mechanism.
Right. We move from the macro level of global tariffs, AI infrastructure, and Wall Street billions down to the deeply micro level, the personal and honestly chilling account of the author himself.
Yeah, this part gets very real.
What actually happens to a private citizen who refuses to comply with this new system?
To ground this in reality, Lambie makes a point to tell the reader exactly where he is writing from. Omaha, Nebraska.
Right, not D.C. or New York.
Exactly. He is drawing a stark geographic and cultural contrast. He hasn't written from a smoke-filled room in Moscow or even from the political bubbles of the coasts. He is right in the American heartland.
And he says that in Putin's Russia, political dissidents have a tragic habit of facing defenestration.
Right, which means they mysteriously fall out of hospital windows or tumble down staircases.
Yeah, and he explicitly states, "I have not been thrown from a window."
But then he introduces the American version of this tactic.
The concept of American defenestration.
Which is?
Lambie argues that the American state doesn't need to use physical violence to silence a critic. Instead, they use endless audits, labyrinthine paperwork, and total calculated financial ruin.
It's like death by a thousand paper cuts. It's less like an assassination and more like a financial quarantine.
That's exactly it.
The state doesn't need to put you in a physical cell. They just build invisible walls around your bank accounts, your business licenses, and your reputation until you suffocate.
And Lambie claims he is facing a targeted, methodical assault by the IRS on his life savings.
Wow.
Yeah. He is absolutely adamant that this is not random, and it is not a coincidental bureaucratic error.
So he thinks it's intentional. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
He says this audit directly follows his decision to speak out and his continued refusal to be silenced.
You know, this raises an important question.
Yeah.
Well, regarding how dissent is managed in this new paradigm, Lambie isn't claiming violent oppression, but rather the weaponization of bureaucracy.
Exactly. The goal of the state isn't to make you a martyr.
Right.
The goal is to systematically strip away everything a person has built, every dollar they have saved, until the personal cost of using their voice simply becomes too steep for them or their family to bear.
And what's truly terrifying is that it goes beyond just federal agencies like the IRS.
It does.
He details a government source smear campaign against him right in his hometown. And what is so striking to me is the sheer banality of the weapons used.
Right. It's the everyday stuff.
Yeah. He claims government actors spread malicious lies to honest, hardworking realtors employed by Berkshire Hathaway in Omaha.
Real estate agents.
Right.
He goes out of his way to emphasize that these realtors were not part of some grand conspiracy.
Right. They aren't spies.
No, they were just decent local professionals doing their jobs. They had absolutely no reason to doubt the information they were being fed by government sources.
But they were unwittingly used as vectors in a coordinated smear campaign?
Exactly. The goal being to isolate him professionally within his own community.
To completely destroy his local reputation.
Yes, and to ensure that business doors close before he can even knock on them.
It's the weaponization of trusted, everyday local institutions.
It's chilling.
Mm.
He writes that this localized destruction is meant to serve as a quiet warning to everyone else watching. Basically, speak up and we will take everything.
But despite the audits and the smears, he ends the piece with this really stubborn declaration of defiance.
He does.
He writes, I am still watching, I am still writing, I am still standing.
It is a powerful, defiant conclusion to a deeply dark assessment of the American trajectory.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Why should you care about an op-ed written by a guy facing an audit in Omaha?
It's a fair question.
Because Lambie's core argument is that the American system is fundamentally altering the rules of success for all of us. He is warning that we are rapidly moving away from a free market meritocracy.
A system where the best idea, the best product, or the hardest worker wins.
Exactly. And we are transitioning into a system of compliance and patronage. A system where your proximity to political power and your willingness to stay quiet dictates your survival.
And that leads to a final thought I would encourage you to mull over today.
Let's hear it.
Building on Lambie's concept of American defenestration, this idea of total financial ruin replacing physical violence, I want you to consider the invisible forces at play in your own professional and personal life.
Okay.
If quiet compliance is truly becoming the new currency for economic survival, how can you ever really know whether the companies you buy from, the media outlets you consume, or the industry leaders you follow are acting out of genuine conviction?
That's a great point, right?
Or are they simply acting out of a quiet, paralyzing fear of the audit?
When the foundation of an economy is built on silence and the walls are designed to strictly control the narrative, you really have to ask yourself, what does it really cost to live inside that blueprint?
It's a heavy thought to leave on, but a necessary one.
Definitely. Well, we want to thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, keep analyzing the structures around you, and never stop questioning the information you're given.